sin free.
This is Stephanie Franciotti, and this is Synth Freak. I'm joined here with my friend, Stephen Ray Morris.
I love it as if I was in actually your attic. You know, when we were podcasting in person, people were like sitting off to the side being quiet. And it's like, you could just erase that track. Like, you know, they don't have to literally be quiet.
Straight up. You can just make them sound like totally different people if you wanted to, which I intend to do. So choose your words wisely.
Yes, of course. I'm going to like, you're going to edit, like, it's going to be like the Zodiac equivalent or like the serial killer, like rearranging the letters to say whatever you want.
Yeah. Did you see that they allegedly found the Zodiac?
They didn't.
Yeah, I know.
If I Paul Holes and Billy Jensen say they didn't catch him, then.
They said that they didn't catch him?
On today's Murder Squad, actually. So.
Oh, I haven't heard
not
it.
Not to plug, but if you want to hear this, the hot scoop of how it's not, it's, you know, DNA. Show us the DNA and then we'll say we've caught the Zodiac. It could still be Ted Cruz, which I think is, you know.
He's apparently capable of taking all of the women's rights away in Texas. So he could probably write a cipher. Who knows? So this week I talked to my buddy Keith Rankin, who is the musician also known as Giant Claw. I don't know if you've heard Giant Claw before.
I did. I listened. I hadn't heard before, but I mean, it was the interview is so delightful and like brought up a good point of like scenes come and go. And so to see that like in his community that he's still holding it down was like really cool. Cause yeah, like I was just, it just made me think a lot about the music I made with people in college and the online communities that I was part of, like the rise of Bandcamp and those kind of stuff in the late 2009s. What is that first 10 years?
I've heard people refer to it as the early aughts and I'm like, ooh. What ought I do with that? You know, whatever. The tape labels of the early aughts, which I also happened to come up in, because all of my early stuff was like tape, and I have so many tapes just from that time period of other bands.
And you originally recorded on tape?
I did.
And then like just nothing else, and then just like straight to,
yeah, like four track upload or whatever. And it wasn't necessarily for any other reason than I was poor. And like, that was what was accessible to me. And then when I started putting out my own music, like very early on, dubbing tapes is obviously way cheaper than like getting a record label to like pay for a pressed record, or I don't know. People still kind of had tape players back then in their cars too.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah, it felt like it was the era of the cassette with the aux cable,
yes,
you know,
exactly.
Here to the first iPods and stuff like that. And yeah, I mean that was when I discovered your music. Aww. I believe Gorilla Versus Bear, probably.
Oh, Gorilla Versus Bear, yeah.
that time really like was really cool
for me. It's like our generation was the last people that remember a time before the internet. Sorry, my baby's going cuckoo bananas back there.
Have you put one of those like auto-tune microphones up to her? Ooh. So it's like,
yeah, definitely. Absolutely. You know, like the early aughts, I feel like people were really struggling with this idea of like moving into a digital age. And there were people like me and people, you know, coming up that were grasping to some sort of analog world or that you still felt like you could control in some way.
Well, also too, like his music is so, it just reminds me of like the video games we played growing up. It reminds me of Windows 95. Like in a weird way, it was like in between of analog and digital. I always like to do the thing, like if I hear about somebody who's going to be a guest on a pod, I'm like, okay, cool. I'll listen first, and then it's kind of like a fun kind of, you know, it does the music match the creator kind of thing.
So as a person, he reminds me of this guy who would like sit in the back of the class in high school and like never talk to anybody, but like you pass by him and you see his drawings in a notebook one day, and it's like he's drawing some like Bosch Garden of Earthly Delights shit, you know. It's like,
oh my gosh,
he's he's so talented in so many different directions. Like, not only is he making Giant Claw, but he also happens to run one of my favorite labels, Orange Milk Records, which is the record label that they put out a lot of emerging electronic acts. And there's not really one common thread, except like the people that I've heard on Orange Milk are making real art. Like, it sounds like it's coming from a true place where they're not just like trying to imitate something. Like, it's like something that people make, you know, because they have to make it.
Yeah, no, that totally is what his music feels like too. Yeah, it feels genuine. Like, it almost feels like somebody gave him like Mario Paint or something and then like came back and it was like he painted the Sistine Chapel with it kind of thing.
I love that. That's crazy. So yeah, like, he does Orange Milk Records, he has Giant Claw, but he also does all the illustrations for Orange Milk, which kind of have like this like classic sci-fi paperback fantasy sort of look to them. They're like airbrushed, like super surreal. He definitely has curated a vibe with his work and his illustrations. If I see an Orange Milk record cover, immediately I'm like, oh, Orange Milk, you know, like, it's like unmistakable. So I'm super excited for everybody to listen to this conversation, because here it is, blah blah blah, XOXO, Gossip Girl.
My name is Keith Rankin. I make music as Giant Claw and co-run Orange Milk Records, which is mainly like underground electronic music. We've been going since like 2010. Yeah, we started as like a tape label, one of the like small tape labels from that era, and have still been going. Like, there's not many left from that time, I feel.
How did Orange Milk start?
So me and my label partner, Seth, we were in Dayton, Ohio. Mm-hmm. That's where I grew up. And like, there was a kind of a community of rock bands and stuff, but there's like a lot of funk music, like Zapp and Roger, like the Ohio Players, Brainiac, Guided by Voices, Kim Deal. Like, it's like, I can, in my mind, I can imagine like the street she lived on. Like, so yeah, there was like a strong like funk kind of like indie rock stuff there. But you know, it's like, when I was young, I wasn't really aware of any of that. It's like, I'd probably even heard some of the music, but I had no idea like the Dayton connection and all that, because it's a small place, like small town or whatever.
What were you like when you were a kid, and when did you start to get into playing music?
So I was a pretty happy young kid, and then I had like a switch at some point. I can still remember it. It was in, I guess, middle school. Like, you know, when you wake up in the morning and are just like, don't want to get out of bed, and just like, God, like, I wish I could just stay here, but I have all these responsibilities and
like, wait, I have to go to. As a child, you felt like you had tons of responsibility.
Well, like, no, school. I'm saying like school. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying like, in general, you feel like I have things to do, like things that I need to do. And if I just don't do them, I'm like, my life is going to be messed up.
Yeah.
So basically, like, it was like a flip switched in my mind, where it's like, I don't care about like any of that stuff. And so like, I stopped going to school.
As like, a kid?
Yeah, in like in eighth grade.
How did you get away with that?
Yeah, I mean, it was messed up. Yeah, like, my mom would take me to the doctor and stuff. And like, eventually I got diagnosed with mono, but I don't know. So I dropped out of school. Like, I didn't go to high school.
At what age?
So I went like maybe a month of ninth grade. How old are you in ninth grade? Like
14 or 15.
14. Yeah. 13, 14.
Wow.
Yeah.
Were you homeschooled?
So I was homeschooled starting in like the end of what would have been high school, by my mom. But the place, they would just send like a textbook and a workbook, and you just had to fill out tests to like pass. And so like, I would look in the textbook for the answers. It's kind of a convoluted way to explain, but yeah, basically it was just like cheating through.
I would have too.
All the stuff. So I finished all, I finished all of the high school in like, you know, less than a year, doing that. And, yeah, I just was on the computer a lot, like was up all night, like at night, had like a flipped sleep schedule basically. And that definitely like completely changed my life. Whatever like chemical stuff was going on and like hormones, I don't know, but yeah, it was a crazy like flip in my life at that point.
It sounds like it. That sounds extremely intense. Was there anything else that was going on around that time that could have triggered that kind of switch in you?
I had like an incident when I was in my early 20s where, yeah, I was just going to sleep and suddenly kind of like woke up but was just frozen, like could not move, and thought I could just see like someone in the room walking kind of like back and forth in the room. God. It was just like my eyes were like watching it, but I couldn't move.
How did that make you feel to like not be able to move?
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like terrifying, but what's weird is that I just kind of fell back asleep.
Wait, so you don't think that you were asleep when that was happening?
It's like a weird half asleep, half awake state, I think.
What did the person look like?
There's no like, it was just like legs or feet, basically.
Oh my God.
So I woke up. So the next morning, I was like thinking about it, like, whoa, that's like, that was crazy. And it just kept like staying on my mind for like a few days. And then I started to realize like, oh, wow, when I was really young, like this happened like every night, or like it happened all the time. It's like I had mentally like blocked it out or something. Like I hadn't really kind of been aware of that it happened so frequently for like years.
That's crazy. So like, so how did you realize that it was like something that you experienced as a kid? Like how, what happened that made you realize that?
So it was basically that experience, you know, in my early 20s that hadn't happened in a long time that kind of like woke me up to it. And then I remember I talked to like one of my friends who I was friends with when I was a young teen. And I was like, do you remember me like telling you about this and stuff? And he kind of confirmed like that, yeah, like that used to happen to you. And like you kind of talked about it back then, but... So yeah, it was crazy. And I think when I was young, it often took the form of like, I'd wake up like that, or like just be paralyzed in bed and just see these like, or thought I'd see these like skittering feet. And it would be like a lot of, like sometimes a lot of feet. So just like,
what?
Yeah. So it's just like,
so I'm trying to like picture this in my mind, but I can't really picture it. Like the way you're describing it, it almost sounds like you're looking from like under the bed and you're seeing somebody's feet because you can't like see anything else.
No, so I'm laying in bed, just like, you know, flat, like kind of paralyzed in bed with my head like laying down against the pillow, and so my eyes are just like kind of like looking across the room. It's like dark, it's just like, it's very not solid, it's just like almost like a hologram of just like images. I mean, it would be different things too, so it'd be like if there was just people, like small people in your room, kind of like fast walking back and forth, but like their upper bodies were kind of in shadow or like obscured. It would be all kinds of things, but I just, the kind of skittering feet is one that I remember being like particularly scary.
That had to be a lot to go through as a kid. And I can see how having to deal with that would make any person not want to go to school. Do you wish at all that you had a more conventional education?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I feel like I missed out on some of the socializing and stuff. And like, yeah, like now I have like stress and anxiety about like weird stuff like that I feel like wouldn't be there if I had kind of like socialized earlier, I guess. My dad was I think, really mad about the whole thing. My mom was more like on, you know, like on my side, like kind of my protector in a way. So there was no, but yeah, there's no, I just kind of was on the computer a lot and like played role-playing games and stuff and music. Yeah. I like played music all the time.
What kind of music were you playing?
So there was a basement and our piano and the, or a piano in our basement.
That's a big ass piano.
A piano in the basement. That yeah, so I'd play on that. That was mainly what I would play on. And then slowly started to like get more into electronic music and want to incorporate that. And also drums and just, yeah, just getting expanding, getting more interested in music, all kinds of music in general. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. When did you first play on a synthesizer?
I'm trying to think. I don't know if I remember my first time.
Do you remember what your first synth was?
Yeah, it was a Gen SX, I believe.
That is fancy.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. Wait, yeah. A Gen is like an Italian synthesizer, right? That's like this little monophonic.
Yeah, it's a monophonic.
I want that synthesizer. That's cute.
All the knobs, yeah, they look great.
How did you get that? That's fancy for a kid.
Well, it was on eBay. I mean, it was like a few hundred dollars on eBay. At that time, I had a little job like at a Chinese restaurant, and like I would spend all my money on synthesizers and like CDs, basically. And like, and someone like anime VHS.
So like, what were you listening to back then?
I liked, I really, there was two albums, like, I think I got around when I was 15, this King, the like first King Crimson album and, Hounds of Love by Kate Bush.
Nice. Wow. When you're 15, you already discovered this shit. That's pretty cool.
Is that, I mean, isn't that the, I feel like that's the kind of age for that stuff, don't you think?
I mean, I guess, but when I was 15, I was, I don't know, I was like listening to just like this, I guess like the Smashing Pumpkins or just something like kind of more surface generic and like whatever. Yeah, I mean, I thought like Hot Topic stuff.
Right, right.
Like Tool.
I mean, I liked, sure, that. Sure. I liked Tool and Korn and stuff. Like, I mean, back then it was kind of like literally everything I heard, it was like mind blowing. Do you know what I mean? Like,
it was like, it's such a bleak time to love music. Like our early high school years of like Korn and Limp Bizkit and like rap rock. It's disgusting.
I think, yeah, at least for me, it was like everything was like blowing my mind. Like it was like a sweet spot. Like that doesn't happen now. Like it, I don't know. When I was in my 20s, it didn't happen. But like literally everything I heard was like, holy shit, like this is crazy. Like,
yeah.
Like it didn't matter. Like, yeah, like Korn or Kate Bush or whatever. Like
it's because it's new and your brain is just like,
yeah,
experiencing everything for the first time, you know?
Yeah. And it only lasts, you know, I feel like it only lasted for me like not that long, like maybe like 3 or 4 years or something before it was like
cynicism set in.
Yeah, cynicism, a little bit of cynicism starts to creep in, and like you start to associate some music with like a certain type of person, and are like,
yeah,
like this person sucks, so like I don't want to be associated with this music, or you know, whatever.
So you said that you just started buying synth gear when you were in high school. Was there something specific about synthesis and electronics in general that interests you?
Honestly, I think it was like filter sweeps was a big, like, just like that sound of like, of a sound like mutating like that, or like starting one place and then like shifting to another, like tonal quality.
Do you know? It's like you have so much control. It's like a creative playground.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you can do that a little bit like on wind instruments or something, like kind of morph the sound a little bit, but yeah, on the synthesizer it was just more extreme, and I just loved that morphing of the sound. And I still do love that with like digital instruments and stuff, when like a sound starts at one place and kind of like morphs to a completely different place. I feel like you learn a lot just by absorbing and listening to a lot.
Yeah. You know, something that you said earlier about kind of like losing your innocence and becoming musically jaded.
Yeah.
Kind of resonated with me, because your record label, Orange Milk, is so diverse and fresh in terms of the artists that you put out. What do you think they have in common?
I mean, the only thing in common is that when me or my partner Seth, like when we've heard the music, it's like kind of just ignited something inside of us. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Usually it's like really quick. Like I can just hear it, like just know the excitement really quick, like within like 20 seconds or something. And so it's like, what is that? I don't know what that, like sometimes I've tried to explain it, like it feels like the artists were like very much into what they were doing. Like they've just trying really hard, or like I had something to prove, or like some kind of like intensity to the music.
It's like an instinct, sort of like gut, this speaks to me or it doesn't.
Yeah. And,
I like that your label is very eclectic in terms of what you put out, you know? It's hard to pin anything down except that it's good and I like it.
I was gonna ask you, about like classical training? Do you have any of that training? Yeah.
So I mean, like I took a lot of choir as a child. Like I remember really wanting piano lessons and really wanting music lessons. But I mean, I grew up really poor, and I still can remember this. It like haunts me to this day. My mom being like, singing is free. Like you're gonna be in choir. And I'm like, but I want to be in band. She's like, you're gonna be in choir. But it's cool though, because it really shaped my approach to music, and like the way that I think about music in general is rooted in ear training, basically. So to answer your question, no, I'm not like formally trained on the piano or anything.
Yes. I mean, so I fantasize sometimes about just like going to college or something, like for music, even now. And just like, I don't know, just learning all that and being able to like really shred on the piano and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it would be funner now, like a little bit older, to go and absorb all that.
Yeah. Do you, have you tried to learn how to read music ever? It is really hard. Every time I've tried to like force myself to learn that, it feels like my brain wants to hurt me. Like my brain is just like, not today.
Yeah. I think musicians like us aren't really using, it's like if I'm using the MIDI role, like that's the version of notation that is like, I am like practicing or like seeing on a frequent basis. So it's like, yeah, I don't really have an application for the other.
Yeah. And you know, what's funny is like, for me, so I didn't get a computer until like, and I didn't like record my own music even until like 2012 or something. So most of my recordings, everything before that, it was like just hardware played live. And once I got like Ableton, and I could like see the notes on the screen, it was just so hard to get away from it. Like I haven't put out music in so long, and I think part of that is because there's too many directions that I could go on a computer, and it makes it really hard to step away or put it down or even have like structure. Cause it's like computers make it easy to be myopic and to loop on one moment. Mm-hmm. I've worked on some songs for years, and it's not because they're not done. It's just cause they're not done to me.
Right.
Cause I can't just walk away, cause they don't feel like every little moment isn't what I want it to be.
So. Yeah, it's hard. Like when you get like 80% done in your mind with a song, to me, like it really eats away at me if like mm-hmm. if I don't like call it done to myself soon. Yeah. So like having a song lingering for that long is that's happened to me before, but it's like really mentally just like frustrating, I think.
Yeah.
Did you ever have you considered like going
to back therapy? To your... Yeah.
Like just using your old setup or something.
I actually busted out all of my old gear recently. Mostly just to play with my daughter. Like she loves synthesizers. And that's cool. I don't feel like I'm like forcing music down her throat or anything. Right. Like she hears music and she just like stops her tracks and is just blown away. So of course I'm like, all right, time to bust out the gear. And we've been having like these dumb family jams and she loves it. It's the perfect thing for a baby.
That's cool. Yeah, that's amazing. I would be with kids, I would be stressed about like if they're gonna hate, like, you know, like rebel against the things that I love. Or
you know what's crazy is like, so I used to nanny kids when I was still like full-time musician that hated my music like so much.
The kids did?
They hated it. And like I don't know, like I think I got some weird pleasure out of like playing something for them and them being like, I hate that. And I'd be like, oh, okay. You know, because it just felt like more real, like getting gauging their reaction. Like wow. Just I can't show this to anybody if the kids don't even like it or whatever. But back to my thing with Lola is that she loves my music. Like I don't think she knows it's me, but you know, I've played her a couple things and she's just like, yes, yes, and like just jams out to it. So I mean, I just think that she just genuinely loves all music too, in a way that other kids that I've known don't.
I always wonder about that. Like I feel like me and my mom have argued about like she thinks that like art is like intrinsic in people, and I've always been like, no, like if you spend enough time, anybody can reach a certain level of confidence and stuff.
The desire to sit with something or even be turned on by any art, like I don't think that like everybody gives a shit, so they're not going to, you know?
Right. There's some people who just have no, like get no pleasure from art or music. I just think about those people, like how much my life revolves around like art and music, and then that there's these other people whose brain chemistry is just like, I don't give a shit. Like it doesn't mean anything to me.
So that's something that I really admire about you, is like you really have found a way to have a career and that is pure art. Like it doesn't seem like you make a lot of compromises in terms of, you know, how you spend your time. Like you're not working a day job, is from what I know, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm for the last few years, I've been making a living from like visual art commissions. And then, you know, like music on the side has like been extra, but if I was only doing music, I would have to have a day job. Yeah. Yeah, there's more compromises with my visual art, because it's like, you know, a lot of times I'm just fulfilling someone else's desire, basically. I feel like I'd be more uncomfortable doing that with music than visual stuff for whatever reason.
I identify with the thing that you said about it being easier to be kind of a hired gun visually versus musically, because I don't know, maybe it's just like for me specifically, it's easier than with music. Like what you get from me with music is like whatever the fuck comes out. It's not really something that I can predict or sculpt that well.
Yeah, that's I relate to that strongly too. Basically when I was young, I was very into like drawing, and I was into that and music like very equally. Like I loved them both.
Yeah.
But I feel like as I got a little older, I kind of dropped off on the visual side and kind of missed like this crucial period most people go through like as teenagers when they really develop like perspective and just like all these fundamentals of like drawing basically. So like I feel like I'm not that good of a visual artist like from a technical standpoint.
Hey, that's all right, whatever.
Well, just from like a, yeah, I mean it's very subjective, but like,
you mean like hand drawing?
Yes.
Like, okay, because that is a whole different ballpark, and yeah, it's like takes a lot of practice and education. Yeah.
Like basically I would love to be able to just make an image from like any perspective, like any object. Do you know, it's kind of hard to explain. Like I feel like people will hire me for art jobs and like kind of expect that I can just do like anything. This year, honestly, I've been considering like stopping doing commissions. Like I'll find myself having these like weird fantasies about just like getting a job at Kroger or something, which
is
like,
oh my god, dude. No, but I totally fucking understand what you mean about that though. Yeah. Like I had this whole, like, I think it was also just like turning 30, it's somewhere in there. Like I've worked my whole life to basically avoid a day job and avoid being like a normal person. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, I saw office life as some glamorous thing. It's just kind of, it's not, now that I'm fucking it's not at all.
It's terrible. Yeah. I mean like, yeah, that's, I have to remind myself like what it was just like I just would remember being at my old day job and being like, humans were not meant to live like this. Like as in just like spending 8 hours a day just doing something you don't enjoy at all. It's like, but yeah. Like freelance, it's like I still find myself like working for bad bosses basically is mm-hmm. what it comes down to. It's like you're still in that kind of like like hierarchy of like someone kind of bossing you around or like not like valuing you as like a human being or like I don't know how to explain it.
Capitalism, baby. Fucking hell.
So it's like, yeah, it's just a constant trying to like
balance,
like how how can I get out of this, but maybe there's no getting out of it.
Well, so let's rewind a little bit. Like freelance is one thing, but with Orange Milk you could kind of be your own crappy boss. I want to know more about how y'all got started.
Yeah, basically it was me and Seth like recognize each other as like, oh, this is like a kindred spirit essentially, like someone else who like just really loves music and like is curious about music.
Mm-hmm. How'd you guys meet?
So we actually met in like a community college political science class. The teacher was like terrible. Like I dropped out. I did not finish the class, but me and Seth, we didn't even talk to each other. I just saw him and like, he was kind of like a troll to the teacher.
Did you all both identify as being subversives?
Well, no, I was like, this guy's kind of a douche is what I honestly thought.
Wow.
But then we met later because like the bands we were in played together and then we talked and I was like, oh, I was wrong. Like this person is like, it's like I love this person, you know.
Aww.
Yeah, we were really into all like the tape labels that we had, you know, that we kind of talked about a little earlier. I want to be a part of a music community. But like we're in Dayton, there's like no one here who like likes what we like, really, at least that we know. So I think to me the label was a little bit like, let's inject ourselves like into this music community and like see if we can make friends.
Yeah.
or if people can pay attention to us.
So who were the first people that you put out?
the first released was this Chicago group called Gone, G-A-apostrophe A-N. It turned into this like horrible disaster though, because I just emailed them like I love your music, can we put out like your first album or whatever. So long story short, the person that I was talking to, like the contact with the band, was their ex keyboard player who was like had fallen out with the band and wanted to like get revenge on them.
What?
Yeah. And like he was like a extreme like sociopath.
That's bonkers, cuckoo bananas.
Yeah.
So what happened?
It was basically like we sent the record to press, like it was at the vinyl pressing plant. Like we had put all our money into this, like, and we had Orange Milk had like just started. So it was like our, you know, like we put our money into the label to like,
you're kidding me,
like try to get it started. And I was actually talking to Robert Beatty and I was like, hey, we were just kind of like saying what was going on. And I told him that we had just sent this Gone record to press. And he was like, oh, that's weird. Like I literally just did artwork for that same album on a different label.
What?
Yeah. And so it was like, oh my God, like this other label is doing the record at the same time. And the ex-member was just like leading us along to like screw them over, basically.
Oh, dude, that's such a violation. That's crazy. What I don't understand is why they would do this to you.
Well, yeah, they were just clearly like extreme sociopath, like didn't care about, you know, didn't care about anything. Like,
so what happened?
So we canceled we told the pressing plant, like, don't finish, like, we're not going to do it, like, cancel it. Yeah. And we just like lost a ton of money. But it was like, I can't, you know, it's like, I can't continue with this. Like, when it's this person's like twisted, like, revenge scheme, like, played out through our record label.
Well, how did the band react when they were like, you're putting out our record? What?
So I emailed the other guy in that band, I can't remember, after I think maybe Robert like gave me their contacts or mm-hmm. something, and just like explained the situation. But it felt like they were probably just like so like stressed over it, and I don't know, it was not, I just said like, we're not going to do it. And then there wasn't much more communication, basically.
So there's no like hard feelings with you and.
Oh, no, people. No, not okay. At all. No, not at all.
That's crazy. So what happened to the I want to know. I want to know names. Who did this?
I can't even remember the person's name, but it's, I mean, it's.
So you started Orange Milk with a bang.
Yeah, with a total failure. And then like I put my first album, my first Giant Claw album was like one of the first ones. Mm-hmm. And one of Seth's was one of the first, kind of just like like a vehicle for our own music. Yeah. But
how has your music grown since then, compositionally? Like how has it progressed since you first started to where you are now?
Like on my newest album, like it's way more composition, like MIDI keyboard composition. Mm-hmm. So like way less collage style, more just like kind of like that like stream of consciousness composition. But a lot of it started with me just like improvising on the keyboard for like an hour or something. And then just like generating all these ideas. And you know, it's like one or two little like melodies or chords or something will just like speak to me. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, ooh, when that happens, like that's the like gold moment. And then I'll just like pick those out and kind of try to expand on them like that.
That's cool.
Yeah, but it's like a constant search for those little like sparks of excitement when you're improvising. That's how I've been doing it recently. My early music was just on the piano. Mm-hmm. When I started getting into synth music, it was more kind of like a rejection of the composition stuff. Mm-hmm. And more, I just wanted to like just deal with sound more rather than like structuring notes and harmony and all that. So yeah, I've gone through like different phases of like approaching composition or just like pure sound making, I guess. But yeah, I love like a blend of it a lot. Like I love when there's like a composition core to it, but it's just like has these like out there beautiful sounds. Like yeah. That's I especially like right now, I really love hearing that.
Yeah. For me, when I'm making music or when I did make music, I would always try to like put something really ugly in my songs that was just like I wanted there to be something really pretty and really ugly at the same time. And
like, would it be just like a sound? Yeah, or like a
sound, like something scary and then something that was like beautiful. It was always important to me to kind of balance both of those things.
Yeah, that's a good practice. I feel like I would do something like that, kind of like adding like interjections into the music, mm-hmm. where it was like I'd have this like flowing part and then be like, what if here it's like a sound came in abruptly and then like it just like stopped and like went to silence.
Yeah
like the feeling of disruption in music, it's because it was like I liked hearing that in other music. I was like I remember hearing like a James Blake song where it was like a club song, but then had like a, you know, like a 10 second pause for silence and things like that. I'd be like, oh, that's like, I love that. I love hearing that. But then sometimes in my own music, I'd be a little like afraid to put it in. Like,
yeah,
I don't know why.
John just Cage like, already did it. I don't know.
Yeah. Like it just would make me a little uncomfortable. But then when you push through the discomfort and, I would always be happy that I would put those like interjections in or just.
I'm happy too, because it makes it interesting. Tell me more about your composition approach.
I see certain types of music as like stand-ins for like a stable reality or something. Like it's like pop music form is our like modern kind of like home base or like,
yeah.
Like cultural, like sense of stable reality, if that makes sense. Like it's a form that like most people are very familiar with. Like you can like hear it and like be comfortable in where it's going.
Yeah.
And like, and you can kind of like predict maybe where it's going, or like have a little surprise if they throw in like a diminished chord or something like that. So it's like in musical language, like that pop structure is like the comfort zone. It's like, it represents like a stable reality. And like the more, like if you play inside it and like go in different directions, for a lot of people, it's like kind of just skewing reality. And I feel like for young people, especially, like that can be really important to like to me, it's like music that did that made me think about reality itself differently. Like it goes beyond music. It's about like how you relate to the world and like how you define what's normal or like what's unusual. So it's like, yeah, it's all part of the same thing about like how you relate to reality in the world. And honestly, sometimes like the interjections are meant to kind of be like, you know, like when something crazy happens in your life, like a death or like a big change, it's like, it's almost like I can't even comprehend that like this is happening in my life, or like it's such an abrupt disruption that it's just like, it's just insane. And like, I guess the attempt to like approximate that even a tiny bit in music is like what some of those like interjections are about to me, I guess.
As always, our theme music is by Synth Freak from Austin, Texas. check out their YouTube at www.youtube.com/thesynthfreak with freak spelled F-R-E-Q. If you enjoyed this episode, do yourself a favor and check out Giant Claw and all the other Orange Milk bands on the Orange Milk Bandcamp.